Welcome to Partnering Leadership, conversations with leading influencers in the greater Washington, D.C. region and global thought leaders, helping you align better with your purpose, grow professionally with meaning, and have a greater impact. For additional leadership insights and bonus content, visit us at partneringleadership.com. Now here's your host, Mahan Tavakoli.
Welcome to Partnering Leadership. I'm really excited this week to be welcoming Ralph Specht. Ralph is a visionary business leader and creator of the Soul System, a framework that aligns value-creating employee action with broader corporate strategy through shared understanding and shared purpose. He is also the author of Building Corporate Soul, Powering Culture and Success with the Soul System. I really enjoyed the conversation with Ralph, most especially because as a leader, he has been able to build soul in organizations and now through frameworks and stories, sharing how we can do that in our organizations too. I also enjoy hearing from you. Keep your comments coming. Mahan@mahantavakoli.com. There's a microphone icon on partneringleadership.com. Really enjoy those voice messages. Don't forget to follow the podcast, Tuesday Conversations with Magnificent Changemakers from the Greater Washington, D.C. DMV region, and Thursday Conversations with Brilliant Global Thought Leaders. Now, here is my conversation with Ralph Specht. Ralph Specht, welcome to Partnering Leadership. I am thrilled to have you in this conversation with me.
Mahan, it's my pleasure to be with you today.
Ralph, your book, Building Corporate Soul, talks about organizations having a soul. But before we get to it, would love to know whereabouts you grew up and how your upbringing impacted the kind of person you've become.
I grew up in a small town in the northern part of Germany, near a place called Gütersloh. In Europe, there's an interesting sentiment that we didn't have for decades because there's a war pretty close to us. And I grew up in a place near that town of Gütersloh where there was a Royal Air Force base, because at that time, Germany was still with the Americans and the French and British, and obviously in Eastern Germany with the Soviet Union. And that's now more than 30 years ago since unification. But when I was a kid, those jet fighters from the UK were always there because the base was just a few miles away. And in my upbringing, I didn't have that much to do with the army in my life, but my father was a civil engineer in the town hall of the small city we were living, and he took care as his second job on a city partnership between the city that I was living in and a French city. And so I spent a lot of time in my youth, probably 6-8 weeks every year in France, in that little city where we had partners with, and spent time with French families. And I think that time made me a person that looked very easily and with lots of interest into other cultures and other countries. And my French at that time was much better than my English, which right now it takes a week when I get into France to get into the rhythm. But in my business life, I spent a lot of time in countries around the world, globally. And I guess it's because of that time in France where I had a lot of interaction with a so different culture, which I appreciated quite a lot. And I think it was something that stuck with me since then.
That ability, Ralph, to connect with other cultures is really important, not just on a global scale, but also on a human scale, which is important for leaders as they are leading their organization and the many cultures within their organization. So what got you to thinking that corporations and organizations should have a soul, Ralph?
When I stepped down as CEO of Spark 44, I received, as you would expect, lots of messages and WhatsApps and text messages and emails from people inside the organization. But the messages were different than I was expecting what would come. Because what you would expect is a message like, we had a great time, and remember what we did here, and all of these things. And the messages I received were a much deeper level, I would say, because people reflected on their time inside Spark 44, occasions where they had interactions with me that they still remembered even 6, 7, 8 years later, because for them they were pivotal in their career. One sentiment that came through a lot of messages was, I have accomplished things that I never thought I was capable of. And these messages, when I was contemplating about them over Christmas that year, I was like, they are just too important to just stay on my iPhone. And I thought there's a bigger message here. And outsiders, when they looked at Spark 44, they said, well, successful agency, they grew from 0 to 1,200 people in just a few years and 18 countries and global, and what an Effie award for this and that and the other and all of these things. And they're all true. It's nothing wrong. But the legacy isn't that. I think the legacy is Spark 44 was a company with a soul and a very unique culture. And my co-founders and myself, who helped to create an environment where that could flourish, and we hired a lot of right people to help build it and grow it and scale it. I think every company has a culture. You can't have a company without a culture, but only few got so.
Ralph, I wonder, were you intentional in creating that soul that resulted in what the employees that messaged you had noticed and how it had impacted them? Or was it that the way you led ended up in the organization having a soul?
I think it's the former. I think when we started back in 2011, sometime in February, we got the green light so that the five of us had to set up an agency, a global agency in Los Angeles, in Shanghai, in Frankfurt, and in London until the 1st of June. So not a lot of time. And I still remember that day because when we received the green light, we went to London, the five of us, spent the day in a conference room in a befriended agency with lots of flip charts. And we were trying to figure out how do we really do it. And we talked about culture, and then we started, okay, what kind of culture do we want to have in this place? And it was a bit difficult to put that into words. And then we flipped the question and asked ourselves, what culture do we not want to have in this place? That kicked it off big time. So within, I think, 15 minutes, the flip charts were full. And when we grouped the points on those flip charts, it became very clear what we had to do in terms of organizational design to allow that culture to happen. A single P&L was a big reason. We had a big constraint, obviously. I mean, normally a startup doesn't start with 80 people. We started with 80 people, it's a lot. But those 80 people were four times 20 people because they were in LA, Frankfurt, London, and Shanghai. Resource was always a challenge. So we said, let's hire complementary skills in the four locations so that we get all the skills we need, but we don't have every skill everywhere, which created a sense of collaboration between the four offices that was a second to none. And remember, this was 2011, and there was no Zoom those days. We used GoToMeeting that already existed. But it felt, to many people that were joining, it felt they entered an agency on Mars because they never, we had never been on WebEx, GoToMeeting, Zoom, whatever you call it today. And even FaceTime was kind of, oh, yeah, you can use that in business too. Okay. So all these things happened at that time. And I think that was intentional in terms of the culture. Then I think we made a lot of good decisions in terms of hiring the right people. You always also make bad decisions in this area. But we had a great team, and that team grew and grew and grew and grew, and the culture was growing with it. And I think that was the biggest achievement.
One of the main points, Ralph, I consistently make is that every organization, as you also alluded to, has a culture. The best have an intentional culture. So as you were putting together the plans for the organization, you decided how intentional you wanted to be with respect to culture. And a great way of doing that is how you did it. You looked at what you didn't want to be part of that culture, and that helped you make this intentional culture for the organization. I wonder, from your perspective, in what way would moving the culture of an existing entity be different from establishing the culture of a new entity as you were doing then?
As we grew, there were two phases. The first 3 years, we grew from 80 people to 270 people. Then we grew from 270 people to 650 people within 3 months.
Wow.
You can imagine what happened. And at that stage, there were lots of new offices, and there were some of us that were just growing in size extremely. As we were doing that, we were basically bringing in full and complete teams from other agencies that were embedded into our culture. And it was a huge challenge. And it didn't always work out. I mean, There's only so much you can do. Leadership can create an environment where these things happen. But if it's too many people in too short a time, it is a challenge. So coming back to your question, if you have an existing organization, it's a tough gig. Because what you need to achieve, and that's where the framework that's in the book comes in, you need to achieve a situation where everybody is clear about what the company really is about, where it wants to go, how it wants to get there, and how that journey manifests itself in many different things. So for instance, when we grew, one of the things that helped significantly were lots of events that took place that were kind of coded. Lots of great people, and many of them took the initiative, and management gave them the space to do it, to develop initiatives that were critical to the culture as we were growing. So for instance, Milland, our colleague in LA, created Sparkapalooza. So for everyone in the US, the Palooza element is something that's easily to understand. For everybody outside the US, Palooza, what are you talking about? And so Milland had this idea of a week of inspiration and outside speakers coming in and pro bono projects and a bit of party, a bit of fun and all these things. It was great. We all thought this is a real great initiative. So we said Sparkapalooza can also happen in Tokyo and it can happen in Dubai. And we had the Mumbai office and the Dubai office come together, do that. It happened in London and Frankfurt, everywhere. And for instance, another two colleagues, Gonzalo from Madrid and Leticia from Sao Paulo, because they were like Spanish and Portuguese countries, had a lot of things that they had to do together anyway. They came up with the idea, why don't we create something where a colleague from one office spends a month or two in the other office and two people just swap jobs. And they called this Spark B&B. The first two people who moved to Sao Paulo, Madrid, and Madrid, Sao Paulo, we just merchandised that like nothing else internally. And guess what? People from offices connected with other offices because they wanted to work together or wanted to change jobs and swap jobs. And can I spend a month in Sydney? Everybody wants to spend a month in Sydney. It's difficult to get anybody out of Sydney. But these kind of things, you've got, when these happen, three choices. Your first choice is, are you endorsing that as management? Do you let that happen? Because very often people say, no, we don't have budget for that. And budget was the least of the problem in this because it's like a $500 flight. It's kind of manageable. But the second choice is, are you getting serious about it? Are you getting conscious about it? Do you drive consciousness about the initiative? Is it just one person from that office and another person just swap jobs and you don't tell anybody about it and it just happens? You could do that, but then it doesn't help the culture. It's a good initiative for these two, but that's it. You have to code it. That's why we called it Spark B&B. We merchandised it internally and it created a life on its own, which was critical to the culture because one of the things that we were always about from the very first day in this flip chart conference room in London, 2011, it was about creating a globally aligned team and an inspired community across the world.
The point that you make, Ralph, in that part of culture is establishing practices, but as important, if not a more important part of that culture, is the communication internally that comes afterwards, whether you are a marketing and advertising agency or even smaller organizations in any industry. Retelling those stories so people understand what the organization values is as big a part of making sure that culture permeates the organization than it is just having the specific initiatives. Now, you did all of that running the organization. And afterwards, with all the comments that you got from the team members, you realized, I need to capture this thing into organizational soul. And you came out with the soul index. What is the soul index, Ralph, before we break down the different parts of the soul system?
So when I wrote the book, you talk to a lot of people, you interview a lot of people, you research and are constantly looking for case studies that make sense in this context. And as I was doing that over 6-7 months, I think I put huge piles of surveys and rankings and all of these things. And as I was working through them, my way through them, same names, same companies popped up again and again and again. So as I finished writing the book, I was like, okay, now why don't I start playing with the numbers a little bit? Because The book makes the point that when you're evaluating corporate culture, the people you should never ask are the CEOs. The people you should ask are the people on the ground. I got an email a few weeks back from a CEO who said, I like your idea of soul, and that's great. And we also got a company with soul. My response to him was, congratulations, I'm so happy for you. But I would actually like to hear it from your people, and then I'm going to hug you. What I basically did was I looked into various studies about employee satisfaction, employee engagement, and CEO approval, and gave them a significant weight in this index over business success and brand success. And I was surprised. I thought that this would be good, but I didn't believe until I saw it how good it was, because the top 20 companies, the index is led by Adobe, ahead of Salesforce and Microsoft. So three tech companies, interestingly, but the mix is wide. So you've got companies that have been around for more than a century, like Deloitte Consultancy or American Express. And the youngest company in the index is Workday, which is 2005, if I'm not mistaken. So you get all sorts of companies. You get Hilton Hotels, you got LinkedIn in there. So all categories. And the weighting of employee satisfaction, engagement, CEO approval is what drives success in that ranking. As the ranking was complete, I asked the friend in bank whether they could run a portfolio check on this and look at how it did. And there were many tech companies in the index, so it had to be good because obviously the last years were great for tech companies. But it actually, on a five-year basis, even hit NASDAQ by somewhat 20%. So it's quite something. So the idea of looking and listening to employees, and obviously it kind of makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, these are the people that are closest to what is happening inside a company. They know much earlier and much faster than any one of us what's happening somewhere.
It's a relevant and important point, Ralph. So what is this soul system? What is an organization that has soul? And how does it differ from purpose? We hear a lot about the need for organizations to have purpose. What is soul and how does it differ from purpose?
Purpose has been the buzzword for the last 10, 15 years, hasn't it, right? And I just came across a post on LinkedIn, which was about the purpose washing top 10, right? And I couldn't resist. I had to print it out. And so purpose washing top 10, before I answer your question, is number one, your marketing department is running branding on purpose workshop to jazz up your purpose statements. Number two, you force your top managers to participate in a two-day private purpose retreat to spell out their guts in public. Three, you just hired McKinsey to dust off your codes of conduct. Four, you employed a totally diverse Gen Z chief purpose officer who will fix the purpose issue. Five, you just added your like to the other 30,000 on one of Simon Sinek's LinkedIn posts suggesting that why is everything. So I think five is enough. So I think purpose is important, absolutely. But I think, and that's kind of where the purpose washing comes in, purpose is a means to an end, it's not the end. And very often you look at these purpose discussions and it feels like it's the end, and it isn't. So the soul system is a framework for companies to organize themselves in a way to consciously look at their culture. And it starts with purpose, but the purpose that I'm talking about is what I call a shared purpose. Because you've seen it 100 times, right? You come into an office, great corporation, behind the receptionist on the wall, great letters, typography, fine art, wonderful words. And then you walk from the reception to the conference room or wherever you have to go, and you kind of sense the feeling in that organization, and it has nothing to do with what's been written on the wall. And you're in the conference room, you get into that meeting, and that's also a different world. So shared purpose means shared on two levels. And level number one, shared by the executive team, by the leadership team, because you look at the EY study, the business case for purpose, and they basically say, they asked 5,000 leaders across the world, and 50% of them say our company's strategy is not reflective of our purpose. Well, good night. I mean, why have one? So shared by the executive team is critical, but then even more critical is shared with all stakeholders, predominantly the employees. If they don't know what the purpose of the company is, well, you can't blame them. And the same study says that the executives who said, of which 50% said our company the strategy is not effective for our purpose. They're saying only 38% of our employees understand our purpose. So basically, more than 60% don't. So you got to have that purpose clear. And the next level of the soul system is what I call the shared understanding. So you see there's a pattern. Shared is the magic word here. And shared understanding looks at vision, mission, values, like the three things that every consultant needs to declare about. But I've added a fourth one, which I call spirit. And to me, spirit is the intended culture of the company. It's like that moment with the flip charts where you think about what culture you want in your place. And some companies are great with their values and you don't need a spirit statement. LinkedIn is one of them. The seven LinkedIn values are amazing. They go members first, relationships matter, be open, be honest and constructive, demand excellence, take intelligent risks, and act like an owner. So they have the full spectrum. There's the inward focus, the outward focus. And when you listen to these seven, you're clear about what LinkedIn is supposed to be and their vision of creating economic opportunity to every member of the global workforce and their mission to connect the world's professionals to make them more productive and successful. You are in your head, when you listen to this, you're already clear about what an organization is. So the purpose is no surprise. The purpose of LinkedIn is to facilitate professional networking. So it all makes sense. It's well-rounded. It's very clear. So we got the shared purpose. We got the shared understanding. And that's the theoretical part, right? And then it gets really practical. You get your hands dirty and roll up your sleeves because we're talking about the shared behaviors. And this means all the elements inside an organization that affect how people perceive the culture of that place. Whether that this is about hiring, it's about promoting, it's about which companies to partner with, how to deal with customers. All these elements are critical. And companies that do that well basically create an integrity between the strategy part, shared purpose and the shared understanding, and the behaviors. And as you rightly said, it's walking the talk. And if you do that, you're very close to having a company with soul.
Ralph, I find it's very hard to do that even in the smallest of organizations, making sure that the behaviors align with what you mentioned are that shared understanding and the shared purpose.
I think you need to be really clear about how you incentivize people, which behaviors you reward and which ones you don't. So for instance, I don't know the LinkedIn compensation model in detail, but if you have a values scheme that says members first, relationships matter, these are measurable things. So you can measure how people inside the organization, teams inside the organization are doing on those values, how they deliver on them, or the element of act like an owner. So how much risk-taking is there? How much initiative is there? For instance, Adobe, who ranked number one on the Soul Index, have this wonderful little thing, the red cardboard box. As an employee, you can basically say, I'd like to have the red cardboard box. And if you get one, which a lot of little nice things in there. And one thing that is a bit of a surprise to everyone, because it's a credit card with $1,000 on it. And you can basically use that credit card to buy anything you need within $1,000 to make sure the innovation that is in your head can be brought to life or can be presented in a way that management can decide whether that is an initiative that is really building on. So if you're a company that is high on creativity like Adobe is, that's where you go. So it's about looking at everything a company does and look back in the mirror. Does that match? Can I connect this back to the purpose, the vision, mission, and the values and the spirit? And if you do that, your chances are not bad. But as you say, it's tough.
It is tough, Ralph, but that's why I appreciate books like yours that get us to look in that mirror and ask ourselves the hard questions in order to see what we need to do for our organizations to have more of that soul. Now, in addition to your book, are there any other leadership resources or practices you typically find yourself recommending?
Absolutely. So one key element in the book in terms of growing leaders is the capability of emotional intelligence. And I think one thing people need to consider is emotional intelligence is something you can learn. Nobody is perfect, but you can learn these things. And there's a great tool that I encourage everyone to use. It's a company called EI Game, which is Emotional Intelligent Games. And this company is run by Kevin Allen, and they offer online leadership simulations. So you can basically, A, check your behaviors, see what it does, or what you do and what it leads to, and can play with it and find out which other behaviors, because you always get choices in the various decisions that you have to take, create which outcomes. And that's a highly recommendable resource. I can really only recommend that. And the other piece that I'm looking into every now and again is a great book from Peter Docker. It's called Leading from the Jump Seat, and it's about basically handing over control, because as a leader, that's what you need to be able to do, because otherwise people can't grow. And this delegation of responsibility was one of the principles in that constitution of the company with Bertelsmann, where I started my professional career. And Peter's book, Leading from the Jump Seat, gives perfect recommendations of how to do it. And he was a pilot, so he knows what he's talking about. The start of the book was really a crisis in the cockpit, and he was on the jump seat and his student was flying the plane. So fasten your seatbelts.
Those are a couple of great recommendations. I appreciate that, Ralph. First of all, on leading from the jump seat, it is the fear associated with being in that jump seat and allowing the other person to make decisions that can be life and death decisions as you're sitting in the jump seat. And a lot of leaders are not even willing to let go of decisions that are not life and death. So that's a great recommendation. And with respect to emotional intelligence, it's amazing how many leaders have a fixed mindset when it comes to emotional intelligence, believing that you either have it or you don't. So Ralph, how best can the audience find out more about you and also your book, Building Corporate Soul?
The book's out, and it's been a great moment when your first book comes out. So you can find out more on buildingcorporatesoul.com. You can connect with me on LinkedIn. You can subscribe to the newsletter on buildingcorporatesoul.com. And I'm always interested if anybody has any stories to share about drivers of soul inside their organization or companies that he or she thinks have got soul. There's a form on the website, please fill in. And there's also the soul check, where you can check how your company's culture is doing in terms of soul or just culture. So have fun on buildingcorporatesoul.com.
I appreciate both the book, Ralph, and the resources that you have on the website also. Thank you for joining this conversation, Ralph Specht.
It was my pleasure. It was a great conversation. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Partnering Leadership with your host, Mahan Tavakoli. For additional leadership insights and bonus content, visit us at partneringleadership.com.